Sometime back, I was telling you a little bit about how we need to let our light shine and not look into the darkness. And I have to apologize today because we're going to start out by looking at the darkness. But we do live in a world full of conflict, don't we? Everything that we see, everything that we experience, in many ways, involves conflict. We see nations turned against nations at warfare. We see tribes turned against tribes in other areas. We see people angry with family members, with neighbors, with loved ones, ones they should care about, parents against children, children against their parents. We see the challenges. We see all this conflict all the time, and it's really just a part of our, it's really what we're swimming in every day, isn't it, in some way? How do you get away from it? Where do you go to get away from it? You know, as Christians, don't we claim to follow the Prince of Peace? And yet, don't we see conflict within the church, within families in the church, within those who should be practicing and walking the ways of peace with one another, following the Prince of Peace? We see conflict between spouses. Divorce happens here in the church. Friends are turned against friends. Here in the church, people find reasons to be upset with one another, and their anger and their bitterness grows sometimes. And if you look at the trend of conflict in the church, doesn't it so often mirror the trend of conflict within the world? It seems like we're on a parallel course. Sure, it's not as bad. I haven't seen any guns in the room, happily. You know, we're not in open warfare with one another here in the room, and I appreciate that a great deal. But everywhere we look, turn on the television, watch the news, it's all conflict, 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 conflict all the time. Killing, warfare, hatred, violence. Now, let's face it, violence is an extreme form of conflict. If you took away all the opportunity of warfare, if you made it all stop right now, this moment, I promise you there would still be conflict in the world. There still would be issues between mankind, men and women and men and men and family members and all sorts of beings, all sorts of circumstances that would be conflict. We still would have that world in conflict. We'd still have it here within the church between us, between Christians at times. So why are we the same? Why are we not different? You know, we're supposed to be different, but believe it or not, we really are supposed to be in conflict also. Huh? Did you hear me say that right? Yeah, we are children of conflict, really. Human beings are children of conflict. One of the things, there's a very important thing that we need to understand about conflict and why it happens between human beings, so that we can begin to understand a particular concept that I want to talk to you about today. Don't get me wrong, this is not a message about conflict resolution. It's not about how to get along at work. It's not about how to fix the problems between you and your spouse or your friend or that person you just don't get along with, the next door neighbor or whoever it is. That's not what we're talking about today. I really want to bring to light something that we need to understand, though, as Christians. I want to express it to you, hopefully in a way that you can accept it, recognize it, and begin to deal with it. Because, brethren, if we cannot deal with this basic conflict, we will never solve conflict in our lives in any way, shape, or form. We will never come to any conclusion on conflict. We must resolve this conflict that we'll talk about today. You know, we have to look at a few other issues. We need to identify some things first so that we can understand where we're coming from. We need to recognize that between humans, there are always going to be differences of opinion, right? You know, what color do we make the couch? What color should the curtains be? You need to mow your lawn a little more often, guy. You know, the yard looks terrible. The HOA says you have to. Human beings always are going to have differences of opinion. It's natural. It's normal in any relationship. well, even in healthy relationships, there are going to be disagreements from time to time. The only one that I can think of, the only healthy, truly healthy relationship that comes to mind that there are no disagreements in is between God the Father and Jesus Christ. That's a great thing that we want to ascribe to, but the reality is, as human beings, we can't. We can't yet achieve what they have achieved between themselves. I'd like to illustrate the differences of opinion, though, for a moment. Many years ago, my wife and I have been married just over 24 years now, and I remember early on, one day I came home from work and I found some towels in the dryer. She'd obviously done a load before she went to work and got it into the dryer before she left. And I was very proud of myself because I hadn't actually done any laundry yet. It was still very early on. You know, I hadn't actually run the machine or done anything. And I thought, well, I'm going to surprise her, be the good husband, and fold the towels. And I folded those towels exactly the way I was taught. Just the way Mom told me. Sorry, Mom. I know she's up there in Sholo listening. But much to my chagrin, when the wife came home and she saw those towels, that's not the way you fold the towels. They don't fit into the cabinet that way. And for a moment, I flashed back to being, probably 8 or 9 years old and Mom telling me to fold the towels. And that's not the way you fold the towels because they don't fit in the cabinet that way. I heard the same phrase from a different voice. And I was taken aback. My pride was kind of smashed a little bit. I was trying. Sorry. And there might have been a little bit of rough edges there for a few minutes while we worked that out. And maybe I just went, okay, well, how should I do it? Because apparently I learned wrong all those years ago. And the difference of opinion was worked out. You know, I like to think we have a healthy relationship and we worked out a solution. And believe me, there's been a lot of other opinions down the years that we've had to work out. And she's probably developed more character than I have. Let's put it that way. She certainly learned a lot of patience through the years, working out those opinions with me. So why do we have conflict? What is at the core of conflict? We have a standard to ascribe to. On the Sermon on the Mount, in the Beatitudes, Jesus Christ said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God." The thing at the core of conflict, that's the thing we need to understand, because blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. When we have disagreements, when they lead to the same bitterness, the same lack of forgiveness, the same destructive outcomes as the things that happen in the world, we are not acting as the children of God. Pretty lofty thing to say, isn't it? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. It's not me saying it. God says it. If you want to be God's son, you have to be a peacemaker. You have to resolve conflicts. It has to be what you're about. We cannot be an example to the world of the children of God unless we are practicing these things, unless we are practicing peace, unless we are removing conflict, unless we are understanding the core issue that leads to conflict, that affects all of us. That anger, that fighting, that bitterness comes from someplace else. Today I'd like to identify the meaning of reconciliation by looking at five aspects of human nature that are major reasons that we have conflict. And you're going, oh, that's a big goal. It sure is. And we won't get through all of it in this message. And I'm only going to look at four of those aspects very quickly because we're all familiar with them. We live with them daily in our own lives and in the lives of people we see and we meet with. If we're really honest with ourselves, we'll realize that we have a little bit of this in a little bit of each of these aspects in us all the time. Because we are not perfect yet. So let's look at those four reasons really quickly. The four aspects of human nature that lead to conflict. Pride, first one I have down. No particular order. I can't talk about all four at once, so we're going to start with pride. What is pride? It's an exaggerated opinion of yourself. It is a very deceitful way of thinking. And you will be deceiving yourself when you are acting in a prideful way. You know, as Christians, as a Christian who is experiencing pride, who's enmeshed in pride, they'll forget about how to treat others. That's what Christianity is about. It's about how to treat others right. We'll forget that. We'll forget to treat the other person because our pride is wounded. We will instead be focused on what the other person is doing to us, how they are affecting us. We'll have negative thoughts and feelings. Isn't that what pride is? Oh, well, how dare they? You know, when I folded those towels wrong, my pride got poked pretty hard. I wasn't happy about that. I was pretty irritated. I wanted to be vindicated. I tried. Oh, sorry, I didn't know any better. I had to be right. I wanted to be right. I couldn't be right. I wanted to win. I couldn't win because pride was in the way. There's this way of doing things that's right. And that I'm the one who decides that in the interactions in my life, the way people interact with me. That's what pride is. Me, what do I think? How do I feel? How should I be approached? That's pride. Another aspect of human nature. We all need emotional healing on some level, don't we? We all want to be appreciated. We want to feel needed. We want to be emotionally fulfilled by the person we're interacting with. You know, if the other person hurts us, they got to pay, don't they? I mean, it comes down to it, really. You know, if you hurt me, you're either going to say, I'm sorry, or I'm going to take it out on you some way. That's what that emotional feeling, healing leads to, is that need for justice, or you better say you're sorry. You know what happens if, it happens all the time. You hear the stories of people who had issues with their family members, and the family member died before they could ever resolve it. And they go through the rest of their life, and that person is reaching out of the grave and pulling them down because they just can't let go, because they were never emotionally healed from that damage that that person committed, whether intentionally or not. They hurt them. They never said they were sorry. They never got justice. We can carry those things around too from time to time. We have this need to hear, I'm sorry. And let's face it, I'm sorry is a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? As long as it's followed up by, here's why I'm sorry. I'm sorry, why? I hurt you? Yeah, that doesn't cut it, does it? I'm sorry because I was rude to you. I was thoughtless. I hurt your feelings, and I'm really sorry. Oh, okay. Emotional healing, everything gets a lot better. You know, so that's the hint to everybody. If you really hurt somebody, you got to say you're sorry, and you got to tell them why. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Another aspect of human nature that affects us and leads to conflict are expectations that our needs will be satisfied. Now, in some ways, that's not necessarily bad. Nobody would ever get married if they didn't expect something. On some level, let's face it. I mean, you know, hey, I really want to spend some time with them. They make me feel good. I like being around them. You know, hopefully you also like helping them feel good and they like being around you. But, you know, let's face it. We have this desire to have our needs satisfied. But we can get trapped when other people don't meet our needs, when they don't fulfill our desires. We have this expectation that they're going to give us what we need and they don't. You're not giving me what I need. Well, I don't want to be around you anymore. This is not good. You need to give me what I need. We are all driven to be happy. We're all driven to experience pleasure and to avoid emotional and physical pain. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that unless it leads to conflict, unless it creates an atmosphere of conflict. You know, if all we ever expect from everybody else is to have our needs fulfilled, it's never going to happen, and conflict will ensue. You know, here's an example. In marriage, sometimes if you're a person who needs words of affirmation, you need to hear, I love you once in a while. Or you need to hear, hey, thank you for all that you did. Wow, I really appreciate that. Let's say the husband never says that. That never happens, does it? The guys are just always emoting their feelings. Yeah, well, we forget to do that as men. And if we're not sharing those feelings, if we're not telling our wife we appreciate her, she could get pretty upset. It can be very dangerous. Let's face it, very dangerous. There is a need. We all have this hardwired need to have our emotions healed and our needs met. You know, we have to understand that and work with it. Realistically, we have to work with that. We have to dwell with one another with understanding, or we're going to have a broken relationship. It's just going to come apart at the seams. Those needs aren't necessarily evil. Again, let me reiterate that. But when they drive us to conflict, that's when it goes bad. That's when those needs go bad for us. The battle armor goes on, the sword comes out, the shield comes up, and we are at battle with the person we should be caring for the most. We're attacking one another, and that's not good. If you keep me from what I want to be, if you keep me from happiness, you are not meeting my expectations. You know, that's when it becomes a problem. Fourth aspect. We've already covered three. We had pride. We have this need for emotional healing. We have the third one, expectations of our needs being satisfied. And the fourth one is a hardwired instinct called fight or flight. When we come into a conflict situation, we either run from it or we draw our sword and we battle it. We fight it, don't we? And it's normal. It's kept us alive in some pretty rough situations in the past as the human race. Sometimes it's a good thing. If you see a bear, run, please. You know, just get out of there. But it is not effective to run away or to fight in a conflict situation. You know, it's a good thing, again, fight or flight. But when we use fight or flight to protect ourself, our rights, and we're so concerned with protecting our rights. Well, you didn't have a right to speak to me that way. He didn't have a right to say those things. You know, oh, that hurt me. That hurt my self-image of myself. He's attacking this, you know, my sterling character that's so perfect in every way. How could he say such things about me? Well, he hurt my feelings. You know, I'm going to run or I'm going to fight it. Well, that doesn't work. It's not an effective way. Hey, let's face it. Just about every aspect, most of the aspects of our life, we don't really have a whole lot of control over, do we? It's really what we want to do is we want to control the situation in a fight or flight. And we need to develop the wisdom to understand that not everything can be in our control and to let go of those things. We need to figure out what those things are, develop that wisdom. Now, you take these four aspects, pride, the need for emotional healing, the expectations of having our needs satisfied, and that fight or flight response, and you mix them all together, and what are we talking about? Well, basically, when those things are present in us, we are effectively making ourselves a god, a little g god. We are deciding how we want to be approached, how we want to be dealt with. We make ourselves an idol. We have this image in our mind of who we are as a person and how, when this other person comes in contact with me, they should behave towards me. And if they don't meet our expectations, we have conflict immediately. We feel that they didn't do that right. They don't have the same social skills as I have, and I'm not happy with that. You know, we effectively are saying, I have the right to decide how you approach me. I am the God of me, of my image of myself, and you will treat me the way I want to be treated. If you are going to serve me the way I want to be served. You are going to fulfill me the way I want to be fulfilled. I decide what is righteous in my relationships. It's kind of a strong statement to make, isn't it? We make ourselves gods. It's really what we're doing. We're deciding what's good and evil. We're deciding it. What's good and evil. This leads me to our fifth point, the one I want to spend a little bit more time on that will really roll us into the concept of what is reconciliation. what the big one, the big core problem, the major thing at the bottom of all of these other aspects that is the ultimate conflict that leads to all the other conflict. If we can solve this problem, if we can come to understand it, we can approach it correctly and apply the tools the way they need to be applied and call upon the one we need to call upon and can solve this conflict, all the other things will melt. Most of those other challenges can go away. The things that are within our power to change. What is it? What is it? That's the question. You know, we've all built that idol of self. We've all made ourselves the center of our own mental universe. We all decide what is right or wrong in our relationships. I must be treated thus, and I have strong expectations of how you will approach me. And this is the natural state at this time of human beings. And it's because we haven't dealt with that core conflict. And we're coming to it. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, verse 7. Romans chapter 8, verse 7. The carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. What is this saying? It is saying by our very nature, we are enemies of God. We are in conflict with the creator of the universe right now. What? Brethren, we have to understand this. We have to grasp this. As we come into this Passover season, we need to understand that in our natural state, we are the enemies of God. We stand in opposition to virtually everything He wants and says is right. We have an innate hostility to God and His ways and His solutions. No, I can fix this. Don't tell me what to do, God. No. We all experience that on some level at various points and times in our lives. We know it says in here, do something. And we go, that's hard. I don't want to do that. That's that innate hostility jumping out. And why is it such a problem? Well, because God wants to, we have to listen to what God says. But we are the deciders. We are the gods of ourselves. My mental vision of myself must be served how I want. Our natural state is an enemy of God. Let's go back to the beginning. Genesis chapter 3. You know, before we came in, we were in conflict with God. We didn't even know it, did we? We were in the dark. We didn't have a clue. We might have thought if we were involved in religion of some sort, we might have thought, well, God loves me and I love God. Everything's fine. But we really served our own best interests, didn't we? It was what we were all about, was doing things our way. Well, God's all right, but anyway, Genesis 3, verse 1. Right back at the beginning. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, Satan, which the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the tree of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. You'll be able to decide for yourself how people can approach you. You'll be able to decide how your relationship should go. Wouldn't that be better than having that guy tell you what to do? He doesn't know your life. You know it better than he does. Come on. And so the woman saw that the tree was good for food. She saw that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise. She took of the fruit and ate, and she gave it to her husband with her, and he ate. There are three motivations here. It's good for food. Hey, that's not bad, right? It's not poisonous. Looks delicious. It was pleasant to the eyes. It's a pretty good-looking tree. What's that got to do with anything? It'll make you wise. I'll know the difference between good and evil. Yeah, that's a good thing, huh? You know, again, not necessarily bad motivations of and by themselves, but you combine them and here you have rebellion. These desires become uncontrolled and the thinking gets twisted. Eve sinned in her mind and then acted. She sinned in her mind first and then acted on that sin. Her desires became uncontrolled. She became her own God. I decide what's good to eat. I decide what's pleasant. I decide what's good and evil. She became hostile to God. The nature of man, as originally created, was not hostile to God. It just wasn't. But it became hostile to God when that sin occurred. What if she just said, no, I love God and I'm going to do what he says? What if she just said that? But she didn't. The nature changed. Human nature became hostile to God. And it's been since. Adam followed along and he was changed too. Their nature became dirty. They went from pure to dirty. It's like these kids, you get them all dressed up to go someplace nice, you know, you got the white shirt on them and they're cute and they just look fantastic like little adults, and then you turn your back and they run outside and they're in the mud puddle. Wallowing in the mud. Look, Mom! Woohoo! And they want to track it around the house. They want to mess things up. They decided, well, it was that white, it's no big deal. I'm just going to go play in the mud. You know, we make ourselves gods in our own eyes. We make those decisions. We decide who approaches us and how they approach us. But brethren, there's one important thing to remember. There can be only one true God. Eve took on that prerogative, and we all have. And we've been hostile to God. We've been in conflict with God since. And basically, the one true God said, okay, well, you don't live in my house anymore. And he kicked him out of the garden. You're no longer my kids. You're not clean. You can't live here anymore. I'm not suggesting you should throw your kids out in the street, by the way. It was just an analogy. Every time that you and I succumb to that mental idol of ourselves in our mind and we enter conflict, we're actually back in conflict with God. That's what sin is. It's re-entering a state of conflict with God. We still have that hostile nature in us. Hopefully it's not as strong as it was when we first were called, but it's still there. It still hits us. There can be only one true God. He's not going to have billions of little self-gods running around in his house. My way, my way, my way. I'm God, I'm God, I'm God. I decide, I decide, I decide. You know, fighting about everything because we decide how we live. We decide how we react. We decide how the relationships go. All other conflicts basically stem from this conflict that we have with God because this visual image we have of ourselves. In 1 John 2, verse 16, it says, 1 John 2, verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, looks like good food, the lust of the eyes, it's a good-looking tree, and the pride of life, it'll make me wise, is not of the Father, but is of the world. You notice the same three motivations that motivated Eve, the same three things. Let's go back over those points of human nature that are major challenges. Those first four, the pride, that exaggerated self-view, the need to win over and be healed emotionally, the need to have our needs fulfilled, to have our needs satisfied, and that fight or flight reaction. We need to change our nature. We have conflict with God, particularly when our needs are not met all the time. Our needs. We think our needs, what they are. We need to come back to the core issue. Ephesians chapter 2. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 2. Paul is addressing this core issue here in Ephesians chapter 2. Keep in mind that he's speaking to Christians who are in the process of changing. And he's warning them that they need to stop carrying it with them. They need to stop carrying the carnal man with them. Ephesians 2 verse 1, "And you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins." He's saying you were dead. You were enemies of God. You were subject to the death penalty and you were dead. But he made you alive. He gave you a way out. "In that you once walked according to the world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind," our own God images that we carried with us. It shows that sin occurs in action and in thought. It can happen in both aspects. "And were by nature children of wrath just as the others." Human nature, those children of conflict, those little self-gods imposing their little self-god wills on everybody around them, are children of wrath. Not children of God, children of wrath. Adam and Eve were children of God. They had access to the Father. They lived in his house. They were his children, but they became dirty and polluted when they ate that fruit. They became self-gods, deciding right and wrong. They became children of wrath, of conflict, of bitterness, and of anger. They were no longer the children of God, and that is us. Children of conflict instead of children of God. That is who we can be. Now let's face it, if all humans were evil, we would have destroyed ourselves a long time ago, right? There is some good in there, and happily it's just enough. With God's intervention and who knows what else, we've managed to keep breathing somehow. We haven't killed ourselves off completely. You know, deep within ourselves, we have a real need. We actually have a deep spiritual need to have a relationship with God. We are a huge paradox. We need a relationship with God. Why do we need a relationship with God? Because we were designed to be children of God. We need him in us. But because we have become polluted, because we have made ourselves self-gods, we're in this internal conflict. We want to decide. And we're hostile towards the only one who can give us what we need. The only one who has what we need. And we fight him. I need God. I want God. I want God to help me and love me and take care of me as long as I don't have to do what he says. You know, as long as I can be my own God, like a lesser God, I'll worship you, but leave my life alone, please. We're this huge paradox. We want it, but we don't want it. And that internal conflict spills out into everything, but we have to solve it to solve the others. But we can't do it by ourselves. God has to do it. God had to solve it. He had to cross the gap. You know, before our calling, we were hostile to God. Our minds could not be subject to God's way, to his will, to his law. So how do we get there? You know, we're pretty messed up, aren't we? We want God, we need God, we need him in our lives, but we don't want him to touch it. No, no, take me as I am, just as I am. One of the biggest lies sold to the world. Just as I am, God, just as I am. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18. This is what we're going to focus on from here on. We're going to focus on the reconciliation. What does the reconciliation mean? Now, all things that are of God who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. What is that? Let's understand, God's not trying to kind of patch things up. He's not trying to throw a Band-Aid on the wound. He's not negotiating a ceasefire. It's not a, can't we all just get along and live and let live thing with God. God sees reconciliation as restoring the original relationship he wanted to have with his children. That's what reconciliation is. I want a relationship with the beings that I designed to be my children, and I have to be the one to cross the gap to them. Jesus Christ came to carry out that work of reconciliation. Now, all things that are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation, God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. Not imputing their trespasses to them, has committed to us the word of reconciliation. Now then, we are ambassadors for Christ as though God were pleading through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God, for he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. He wants to completely erase the dirt, the filth that we have wallowed in as human beings. He wants to restore a relationship with God. Restore our relationship with God. He wants to deal with and eliminate the conflict that makes us enemies. There is nobody who is so converted, no human being on this planet at this time who is so converted that that reconciliation is complete. Jesus Christ did not need to be reconciled to God because he never sinned. He was clean and pure from the moment for all time, and he stayed that way. We are still hostile in these little small ways. That human nature is still present within us, isn't it? You know, God's law is a major problem. It's there. We've broken the rules. It hasn't been abolished. A price must be paid. A substitute must be found if we're going to survive. A substitute was found. Jesus Christ came as our substitute. We know this. As our Passover lamb. We've heard this before. Our sins are blotted out now. So now what? Now what? The law was satisfied. God's justice, his sense of justice was satisfied. Our sins were forgiven. Now what? By nature, we are still hostile to God. We are still, in effect, an enemy. We are still infected with a hostile nature that is an abomination to God. You want to blow your mind, go into the Bible, do a word study on abomination, and see all the places where things are abominations to God. We focus on a few as human beings. We like to focus on the sexual sins. Those are the obvious ones, aren't they? Homosexuality, maybe some others. We like to focus on those things and go, ooh, look at what they did. They're bad. There's no such thing as a sin that is lesser. They all are dirt and nastiness to God. They are an abomination to God. I could give you a definition of abomination, but there are ladies in the room and it's pretty ugly, so we won't go there. It's just nasty. It's horrible. It's the worst thing you can ever think of multiplied by 100, 1,000, 1,000,000. It's just ugliness and dirt, and God looks at it and goes, ugh, why did they do that? Why did they wallow in that filth? I had so much in mind for them and I need to clean them up and they can't make it. I have to go get them. You know, I'm not trying to depress you. I'm not trying to make it so dark in here that we're all upset. Oh, man, I'm so bad. I'm so bad. You know, maybe we're thinking, come on, he loves us. Come on, it's not that bad. He loves us. Well, of course he loves us, but he can't have 6 billion little self-gods running around in his house. It just won't work. It'd be a mess. If you don't think so, take a look outside. Look at the news. We're 6 billion little self-gods running around, and look at what we've done. Does it look any better? Have we improved anything? Nope. We have to understand who we are. We have to, so that we can understand who we are to become, what we are to become. You know, there's a reward when Christ returns for those who are working on it. We get to help reconcile the rest of mankind. You know, we need to learn how to do that. We need to learn to reconcile with God so that we can teach others. We need to internalize that reconciliation, that sense of reconciliation, that idea. You know, people say that God doesn't hate anything. Oh, come on, he's love, he doesn't hate. Ha. Proverbs 6:16. Anybody want to turn there? Proverbs 6:16. Six things the Lord hates. Come on, God doesn't hate anything. I didn't write it. I'm not making this up. Look. Six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him, a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift to running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. Yeah, we pick on the obvious sins, but they're all bad. They're all bad. We've got to cross that gap. We're children of wrath, and we've got to become children of God. We've got to get over it, but we can't. You and I can't cross the gap that's created. That's why Christ came. That's why he became our Passover lamb. You know, we can't go out and play cards with the angel of death and say, you know, high winds or low winds. And okay, I'm in. 50-50 shot, I made it. No problem. It doesn't work that way. A price has to be paid. And Jesus Christ came and paid that price for us. And that's God's gift of grace. He's reaching across the gap. We can't force him. We can't twist God's arm and make him come get us. He's doing it on his own. We do have a responsibility, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we don't have a responsibility. I'm not taking the responsibility off of us to do our best. We must fulfill this. We must get at the core of conflict in our lives, or we will lose out. It's over with. It's a big eraser. We are enemies of God. We need to become children of God. How do we cross the gap? How do we get to God? Romans chapter 10, verse 14. How then shall they call on him on whom they have not believed? How do we get to God? And how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? How shall they hear without a preacher? How do people get to God? In verse 15. And how shall they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel of peace, who bring glad tidings of good things. The gospel is about peace. It's about worldwide peace, and it starts with us being at peace with God. God crosses the gap, reconciles us to himself, and we come into a state of peace with God. Not an absence of warfare, not conflict buried by a contract of disarmament, but real peace. He looks at us and says, you are my children. You can live with me. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. Inasmuch then as the children have been partakers, or have taken of the flesh and blood of Christ, he himself likewise shared in the same. That through death, and this is speaking of Christ, he might destroy him who had the power of death and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to the bondage. You know, Jesus Christ came through Abraham and he became the sacrifice, the perfect sacrifice to cleanse us and to give us access to God, to eliminate the fear that has kept us from him. Therefore, in all things, he made him like his brethren. He has been made like his brethren. Do we really understand what that means? Let's think back to this guy who was a carpenter. As a human being, he came, he grew up, he probably worked with his dad. Just the other day, I grabbed a piece of wood that had some splinters on it, and I still have a hole in my hand, and it hurts. I suspect he got a few splinters under his fingernails. I suspect he felt some pain once in a while, and I'm not talking about the cross. I'm talking about just as a human being. I suspect he had a hard time sleeping a couple of times. He might even had an allergy. Oh, isn't that annoying? I get tired of it, don't you? I'm sure he didn't enjoy it either. He was probably, he was definitely hungry a couple of times. There's a record of it. He didn't eat for 40 days once. He felt pain. He suffered. He knows what we go through. He shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death. You know, we can't cross the gap. We can't get to God. So he sent his son to us. He said, go get him. Go get him. And he came willingly. Hebrews 2:17. Hebrews 2, verse 17. Therefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. He had hard days at work. He was sore. His hands hurt. He got hungry. He didn't feel good. The disciples got on his nerves. Oh, he was constantly surrounded by conflict. He sat and cried over Jerusalem once and said effectively, I could fix this if you would just let me. I'm here for you. Just listen to me. Please. We need to understand deeply the price that was paid to cross that gap, to eliminate the conflict between us and them, between us and the God family. We must understand it, or we are just like the world. He went through so many things. His family didn't understand him. His brothers and sisters thought he was a nut job until he died. His friends abandoned him when he needed them the most. He was mocked publicly, beaten, tried unjustly, brutally murdered for what? Telling the truth. That's it. Telling the truth. Let's take a moment and compare what he had, what he gave up to become a human being. He didn't need to sleep when he was a God being. Didn't have to waste any of that time. He didn't have to have a runny nose or use the necessary. You know, as a human being, he said he didn't have a place to lay his head. The Son of Man doesn't even have a place to lay his head. He didn't feel any pain. He suffered as a human being, didn't he? Emotional and physical pain. He was all powerful. Could snap his fingers and angels would rush and do whatever he wanted them to do. As a human being, he was weak and hungry and lonely sometimes. He was the powerful God of the universe, the creator of all. He was made fun of. He was put down. He was ostracized. He gave all that up to cross the gap. Why? Why did he do that? Colossians 1:19. For it pleased the Father that in him all the fullness should dwell, and by him to reconcile all things to himself. By him, whether things on earth or things in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his cross. Because of that, you and I can be at peace with God. We can be cleansed. Our sins are forgiven. The hostility is forgotten. And we can change. Notice what it says in verse 21. And you who once were alienated and enemies in your mind. Enemies of who? Enemies of God. By wicked works. Yet now he has reconciled us. I'd like to give you a quote from a sermon by Gary Petty called The Ministry of Reconciliation, Part 1. Direct quote, the ministry of reconciliation isn't a set of good communication rules so that you and your buddies can solve a problem. Or you at work can sit down and get together in the boardroom and solve a problem. Those are simply ways of dealing with issues. When we talk about the ministry of reconciliation, we're talking about the very core of what a human being is. And the death of Jesus Christ and his resurrection was God's way of jumping across the gulf to bring us back into a relationship by first forgiving us of our sins, because he won't accept us in sin. The idea that Jesus just accepts you as you are is one of the greatest false lies ever told by modern Christianity. End quote. We can't be God's enemies and be accepted. God says, come here, let me change you. Come here, let me forgive you. Come here, let me do something with your life so that you and I are not enemies anymore, so that we can be at peace. Come here and let me do this. Colossians 1, verse 22. In the body of his flesh, through death, to present you holy and blameless and above reproach in his sight. Brethren, peace is made between you and me and God because Christ jumped the void, because he jumped the chasm. Romans chapter 5, verse 6. For when we were still without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. Consider this, for scarcely for a righteous man will one die. Yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrated his own love towards us, that while we were yet enemies, sinners, that is, Christ died for us. While we were his enemies, because he had to do it to have a family, we can't get there. We all admire the guys with the blue ribbons, the Medal of Honor winners, some who gave their lives, some who survived the incident, who sacrificed heroically to try and save their friends, their buddies. They laid down their lives at great peril, and we honor them. And people say, well, that's like what Christ did. No, it isn't. No, it is not. What Christ did was, he was tortured and hated by the enemy. And when the hand grenade came in, he saved the ones who were torturing him and hating him. He threw himself on the hand grenade for the little gods who hate him. You know, when we can begin to understand that, don't our other conflicts seem kind of petty? Maybe. Most of them. Maybe. Don't they seem kind of silly in comparison? Hey, not always. There's things that go on that shouldn't, and they're pretty terrible. And we'll need help with those in this life. But really, why did he do it? Why did he do it? Because he could see through the dirt, the filth, and the crud that we threw on ourselves, that we wallow in, and he can see what we can become. And he loves that. He's motivated by the love of our potential. Even though we are his enemies, he can see what we can be if we want it. Romans 5, verse 9. Much more than having been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. He's not dead. He's not still in the grave. He is alive, and he's doing this work of reconciliation, of cleansing us to present us as cleansed, clean, pure children of God. We have our part. We have to do our part. But that is what he is doing for us. That is how the gap gets crossed. Imagine that. The mind of God in a human being. No longer a human being, still working to reconcile us so that we can cross that gulf and have a relationship with God that can last for eternity as his purified children.